listening to KBOO Portland.
In 2020, Portland saw unprecedented protests for racial justice and widespread criticism of the Portland police and the institution of policing itself. It's now been almost 3 years since over 80% of Portland voters approved changing the city charter to create a new civilian-led police oversight system. The Police Accountability Commission has been hammering out the details, and their plan goes before City Council at the end of August. Totality of Circumstances will be hosting the commissioners live on KBOO on Tuesday, July 25th, and you can call in with questions or comments about the proposal. You can also send us questions at totalityradio@gmail.com. That's totalityradio@gmail.com. Join us on July 25th from 5 to 6 p.m. and make your voice heard.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
Good evening. You're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. And we're very honored to have Deborah Porta from Pride Northwest joining us tonight for our annual Pride show. Deborah, welcome to Trans Positive.
Hi, Emma. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks so much. So let's start, first of all, by just kind of talking about what's going on. Because I know people are pretty excited. We're having Pride, in July, which is really exciting. I know this is the first, and people are sort of like, what happened to Pride? And everybody's like, it moved to July. And they're like, that's a great idea. So tell me, what's going on with Pride this year, Deborah?
Sure. We were also very excited to be able to move to July. It's something we've wanted to do for a long time. We just haven't talked publicly about it a lot because we didn't really have a lot of choices going on, because Portland is a really busy event city and there wasn't any availability. And when the opportunity came about last fall, we just jumped on it, because more and more it's become just really difficult to have the intersecting relationships that we really want to cultivate and support. Because, for example, traditionally, most years, not every year, but most years, we overlap with Juneteenth, the Delta Park powwow, even Father's Day. That's really a thing for a lot of folks. And we're all busy, our busiest of the year at the same time. We don't have time to talk to each other. These are conversations that we've been having in the background for a while. So when the opportunity came, we were right on it, because we just knew that there was so much work, more work that we could do if we could be in July and have this bit of separation. It also allows us, in all honesty, and we know this is a transition year, to extend Pride. We have June and July, and there's so many ways that we can celebrate and put on Pride, so to speak. And now we just have more opportunity to do more things.
Great. Well, that's wonderful to hear. So let's get the details in right away. When is Pride happening?
Sure.
This month.
So the Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade is going to be on July 15th and 16th, Saturday and Sunday. The parade will be on the 16th, stepping off at 11 a.m. in the North Park blocks, heading down Davis to NATO, and then down to the waterfront, down to Harvey Milk Street. With the expansion of the festival, which we were able to accomplish last year, we get to do that again. And so what that means is the festival's larger. We expanded our footprint. And so we're going to have three entrances, one at NATO and Ash on the north end. Then we have Pine Street and NATO. And then we have Harvey Milk at NATO. And so that's the official end of the parade is going to be at Harvey Milk.
Great.
So those are the big ones.
Great. And how much does it cost to go to the Pride Festival?
So there's a weird donation-based festival. We remain deeply committed to ensuring that no one in our community is turned away because they don't have money in their pocket. We do have a suggested donation of $10 this year. And it really does help ensure that we're able to continue putting on Pride each year. But it's a suggested donation at $10, really anything, whatever it is people are comfortable with, definitely helps.
Great. And what are some of the events leading up to Pride this month? I mean, that are going on. Usually there's stuff going on kind of in advance of Pride. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on this year and leading up to Pride?
Sure. Well, there are a lot of things actually happening, which is kind of what is exciting about being able to move to July, because it's just given our community more time to get more creative about what we're doing. But a couple of really specific things are on July 7th, we're going to have the second in a series of youth drag performance programs. We've been working with a young producer and young performers who are just now really getting into drag and helping them create a safe space and an accessible space in order to express themselves. Portland is a really adult space. A lot of everything is 21 and up and all of that. So the takeoff flight 2, the jet lag, is for Friday, July 7th at 6 p.m. The show starts at 7, doors open at 6. And it's going to be at the Portland Center Stage, the Ellen By Studio. Tickets are on a sliding scale. Youth tickets start at 5, adult tickets start at 20. And all of those contributions go to help us support building community with our young people. The other significant event is we were asked this year to take on formal management of the Gay Prides of Portland pageant. It's a longstanding pageant that was created to support and develop fundraising opportunities for Pride Northwest. But it's not actually ever been organized by us. We've just partnered. And this year we were asked to take it on. So that's going to be on the 9th. Make sure the flight is, the takeoff is on July 7th. I want to make sure I said that date correctly. On the 9th is the pageant, also at Portland Center Stage. The show is scheduled, the doors are scheduled to open at 4 and the show starting at 5. Definitely keep an eye on the website for that, because we may adjust that time a little bit because we have a lot more contestants than the pageant has had in a while. So we're trying to adjust some things there. So a little flexibility. But again, it's going to be at Portland Center Stage, Sunday the 9th. It'll be a lot of fun. Gaylibration, again, it's a dance party. That'll be happening on the 14th as well. All of this information is on the portlandpride.org website. You can get links and details and all of those things. The one other thing that I want to bring some attention to is for the first time, NARA Northwest is hosting and putting on a Two-Spirit Pride celebration. And that's going to also be, and there's a lot happening on the 14th. That's also going to be on the 14th from 1 to 6. And we are honored to be, to support that effort and to see it come to fruition. I know that it's been a need and hoped for in the community for a long time. But again, there's more information on our website for that, but it's to our knowledge, it's the first organized Two-Spirit Pride celebration in Portland.
Great. Well, thanks. That's a lot there. You just rattled off the top of your head, Deb. I just can't imagine. You are like you're sort of like the Pride wizard in a way, aren't you? Like the whole Pride is almost like inside of your head.
Well, you know, it is definitely crowded inside my head. I will admit to that.
Crowded in there. Yeah. that's wonderful. Yeah. So, you know, there's been a lot of, in the public sphere in the last 2 years, there's been, not in Portland so much, although even in Portland, we got a little bit of it, but there's been a lot of legislation that's been making the rounds. It started in North Dakota and it just kind of spread out from there. Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida. I mean, affecting many of our different communities mm-hmm. in different kinds of ways. How is that being reflected in how Pride this year is messaging itself here in Oregon? How has the goings on around the country affected organizing for the Pride Festival, the message of the Pride Festival, the attitude of people attending? How is that being affected by this homophobic and transphobic legislation push that's happening right now in conservative states?
Well, you know, that's a big topic, as you know. And our approach in general is first and foremost recognizing that we're in this area, we're not quite as far removed from all of that as we'd like to think we are. You know, even now in the city of Portland, and I think you and I have talked about this a little bit, over the last several years, our visibility and our presence at decision-making tables has been really minimized in a lot of ways. And so Pride Northwest, as well as our partners, particularly ECWI, the Trans Housing Coalition, CAP, you know, others have really kind of pushed back on this narrative that our community is being well respected and well included in the decisions that are impacting our lives, because we're not. This wave of pushback and anti-ness that's happening across the country is also having a very direct impact on us here in Oregon and in Portland, because I saw a report last week, maybe the week before, that there's an estimate of about 100,000 trans community members who are on the move out of those states. And that's just what we're documenting, you know? And Portland and Oregon is one of the places that they're coming. Most folks are coming without much resources. They're not coming, you know, they're coming without established community. And it's not just Portland. It's there areas around the state are recording a lot of new people. Even here in Portland, and this was, a month ago maybe? The ECWI Institute tends to see a lot of new people to the community because they're one of the places that folks land for resources, is particularly health resources, right? And they've seen more new people to Portland in the last, say, 3 months then their entire time as an actual established clinic over the course of about 3 years. So that's just an indication of what's likely coming, this wave of new people. We already struggle to ensure that our folks have enough resources, right? And now we're going to be adding more and more people. So really there's a big conversation happening around how do we prepare for that? How do we coordinate with each other to take care of our community in this way, whether it's, you know, resources, a place to stay, making sure folks have food, connecting with, because you're talking about people who are moving here at this point. Some folks are families, some folks have kids, all of the things that when you move to a new place, how do you access them? So this is a big, this could be a whole show all by itself.
Yeah, and these people who are moving, I mean, a lot of them are moving in response to significant trauma.
Exactly.
I mean, the trauma of, like, for instance, in Kansas, the trauma of that happens when you're always afraid you're going to be arrested mm-hmm. for using the bathroom. Because in Kansas, they've passed a law that says that if you use a bathroom that doesn't match your gender as assigned at birth, then you're subject to misdemeanor arrest.
Yep.
And this is an incredible source of stress for people who have to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is everyone, and several times a day, everyone. So this is a huge source of stress. In Missouri, transgender people are now faced with this Byzantine labyrinth of regulations. Yep. So the trauma that these people are experiencing is motivating them to move. But I mean, mm-hmm. as we all know, when you're reacting to something out of trauma, that's not the best space in which to make the best decisions for yourself. I mean, those are sure. decisions that you make when you're on the run, when you're acting out of fear. I mean, these are people who, the kind of established social networks that we create in our communities that lift us up and give us a sense of place, those people have those in those spaces, in those southern states, in those Midwestern states, and they're being ripped apart. I mean, not yep. only are they losing all of their support and their connections when they go, but their communities are also losing the brilliance that they have to offer to those communities. They're losing those people. So it's oh, yeah. it's always when a move is, I mean, they're basically refugees in a way.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's exactly how I think we need to, I think you're right. I think that's how we need to think about it. These are, you know, these are community folks who are literally being uprooted and forced out of their homes. And like I say, many without a lot of excess resources laying around to make those kinds of moves. Not a lot of local connection here. You know, there are organizations in some of these other states that are reaching out to us and Equi and CAP and BRO to try and make connections for people. But it's a traumatic thing from, as you mentioned, the everyday ability to live and be human and go to the bathroom without being arrested to, you know, we've heard stories around, you know, as these laws have come into play and things have passed, neighbors aren't quite as friendly as they used to be. There's violence happening. There's a lot of trauma playing out through all of this. And a good number of these folks are coming our way. And that's going to it's already putting a large strain on an already strained system. So we really need to look at how we're addressing the needs of our community because we have to.
for a lot of these people, the Pride Festival is a kind of homecoming in a way. I mean, mm-hmm. How will the Pride Festival for people who are traveling here, and this is their first year in Oregon, and you know they're facing some of the issues that we just mentioned, how can that help them to feel a sense of place and a sense of welcome in their new home? How will it do that for them?
Well, I mean, our hope is, you know, the thing about Pride is it's the largest gathering of our people, and it's the largest gathering of, I mean, you talk about being able to walk in somewhere and see the resources that are available, organizations of all shapes, sizes, services, etc. Pride is where they come to each year to be able to reach community. Obviously, Pride's not the only place, but it's the largest place. So, you know, if someone is new to town and they come to Pride, a vast network of resources will be there for them to connect with. That's the biggest thing. And then, you know, literally at the end of the day, it's also about being in a space where they're not by themselves. You know, their Pride is going to have queer folks of all stripes. And if someone comes in, they're going to be able to find someone to connect with, whether it's a resource, a group, just something, right? And that would be my biggest message to that is Pride is the best opportunity to connect to community if you come new to town at that point.
So for the younger generation, for millennials and for people maybe even younger than that, they may not have been around or seen the evolution of Pride as it's changed over the last, you know, 40 years. I mean, it's become something that's almost institutionalized in a way in our culture. It seems like part of the pushback that's happening from conservatives, I think, who I think they probably feel emboldened by the current makeup of the Supreme Court more than anything. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's also an entire process at work called the American Legislative Exchange Council. Mm-hmm. Which has been in the background working for, you know, almost as long, 40 years, on trying to reverse Roe. And I think that the same people who have worked on these trigger laws that went into effect a year ago when Dobbs happened, those same groups were an easy place to go with their next legislative agenda items, which included, you know, taking away the rights of trans kids to access services in the schools. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, they have much more radical agendas than even the radical and terrible things that they've done so far. But Pride is a place where people go to, when Pride started, it started as a space of resistance against an overwhelmingly heteronormative culture that denied queer identity in its most basic forms, such as the right to freely assemble, the right to love who you choose. We didn't even have legal marriage back then, and we certainly didn't have the kinds of services and resources that trans kids have now, for instance, here in Oregon. Can you talk a little bit about the progression of Pride for younger folks who maybe don't know the history of it so well?
I can try.
Just your understanding, like your 5-minute understanding of, like, you know, where did Pride come from to get to where it's at now?
Pride's original purpose was to take our rightful place in the public sphere Obviously, it's very much equated and connected to the Stonewall Uprising, but they aren't the same thing. The Pride's intent is to be the starting place for the work. It's not the end point. It's, as it's grown over the years, it's taken on a lot of different meanings for different folks, and I personally tend to find that to be one of the strengths of Pride, because there is no one single definition of what Pride should be and what it is. Every single person in our community, whatever their identity happens to be, has an ownership of Pride. Even if the ownership is they don't like Pride, it means something to them, right? And so to me, that's part of the power of Pride is that it means something. And that is, I think, one of the most significant growth parts of the arc of Pride since 1970, is that whatever someone's relationship is to Pride, Pride matters in our community. And that gives Pride, and it gives our community power. Pride is visibility, period. Because, as I mentioned earlier, I've watched over the last several years, particularly during the height of the pandemic, when we weren't as visible, when we weren't as present, all of a sudden it became really easy for decision makers not to include us anymore. All of a sudden we're not at some tables where it would not have ever occurred to anyone not to have us there until we weren't visible anymore, and then we weren't present. This has been really visible to me at the city level. Pride's presence as a community vehicle matters in our ability to ensure that we are not ignored, that we are not left out, and that we're not made to be invisible, which is what a lot of this effort that's happening around the country and the efforts that you mentioned, it's a very insidious, long game that has been played against our community, right? And it's a very strategic game. And Pride is part of our strategy in combating that, even at the very basic level of, no, actually, we're not going to become smaller. We're not going to become less visible. We're not going to be okay not being at that table. And so for me, that is the most significant thing about where Pride has come to, is it's a tool for our community to ensure that we are not left out, pushed out, or run out. There's been a lot of study about this. There's a direct connection to the size and the scope of a Pride celebration and the health and well-being of that location's queer community. It's a very direct tie. And so when you have a large, and obviously things are relative, there is no place where we have our community that everything is peachy, right? That's not the point. But they're tied together in terms of our ability to get where we need to be and want to be as a community. And so that's what really drives the work that I do around the impact that Pride could and should have for our community.
Wow, that's amazing. You just made that so multidimensional, and there's a whole philosophy in there of what Pride is. It's really different from, I think, how some people see Pride. I mean, I think on the surface, Pride is this festival. It's something that you go to, and there's music, and there's entertainment, and there's booths, and there's a parade.
Mm-hmm.
But the the work you just described, the meaning you just described, is so much deeper than just that. Do you think that most people who go to Pride see the depth that you see in what it is? I mean, I think they do, but I don't know. I mean,
I think a lot of people do. I don't know that I think a lot of folks know how to put words to it.
Yeah.
What I tend to hear from people who attend Pride, particularly if it's their first Pride, is, and even now, after all of these years, I still don't know exactly how to describe the feeling that I get. For example, on Sunday morning, when the parade starts coming down NATO, and you hear the dykes on bikes roaring up the road, and you know that it's coming, there is just this electric buzz that goes all the way across the festival site. And when you see everyone gathering at the end of the parade, where the parade is coming, and you've got folks, communities gathered there, and you've got community leaders, you might have faith leaders, you might have this person, you might have that person. There is just this overall shared sense of something big happening that isn't about the logistics of a parade coming down the street. And it's that sense of, again, even I still haven't figured out the words after all these years. It's that sense of something happening that's bigger than all of us, but it's all of us together that is happening at Pride. And I do think,
you sound like my rabbi. You totally do right now.
I do think that a lot of people get that. I just don't know if a lot of people, I just don't know if we have to, you know, again, putting language to it. How do you even describe that to someone? And what I tell folks is you have to be there. You have to be there to sense it and to feel it. And I think that is, yeah, that's, it's there are totally, you know, the people's opinions and feelings about Pride are as diverse as our community is. But again, at the end of the day, the thing I think that matters and that makes it matter is that Pride is important to everybody, even if it's not important in the same exact way.
So is Governor Kotek planning on attending the Pride Festival? Do you know?
I do not know for sure. They're not going to have a formal contingent in the parade. That's always one of those, you know, dealing with someone in the governor's office is always just this, we'll know the day of whether or not they're going to show, because so much is based around safety and security for them, that they don't even have full control over themselves. You know, they, the state police control a lot of that kind of stuff. And their, you know, security detail or whatever. So there's a hope that they're going to be able to participate and be there. But we literally won't know until the day of, because a lot can happen between now and then. It was the same way with Governor Brown.
What does it mean to you personally to have somebody who's an out lesbian as the governor of the state of Oregon?
Well, I mean, I think it's really important. It's very much related to that whole thing about being visible and being present and not being able to be ignored and being in a position of influencing so much about policy and social structure, all of these things that have a huge impact on our community. Just having an out lesbian governor tells other people outside of our community that we're there and that they're going to have to deal with us whether they want to or not. I know that's really blunt, but
yeah, no, that's why I asked. What are there any LGBTQIA plus legislators that you know who are going to be in the parade this year?
I mean, there's always there are always a lot. BRO tends to be the sort of host organization. A lot of times, typically, what will happen with our elected officials, queer or otherwise, is that they will identify a group that's meaningful to them, who's participating in the parade, and they'll march with them. A lot of times that's BRO, sometimes it's HRC, sometimes it's Our House. It really varies depending upon who we're talking about. So they don't register or communicate with us directly about that. They'll just identify who it is that matches how they want their presence to be in the parade and communicate with them. The governor tends to be the exception just because of the level of that office. But I have zero doubt that we'll have a significant number of elected officials in the parade.
Oh, great. Thank you. So we've been talking, we're talking right now with Deborah Porta with Pride Northwest about the Pride Festival coming up July 15th and 16th. So Deborah, the in addition to the kind of some of the negative legislation that's been affecting trans and queer communities in different states, even here in Oregon, I mean, people don't realize this, but there were 7 bills introduced into the state legislature this year. Thankfully, they didn't go anywhere. Although one of those pieces of legislation literally hung up all legislative activity in the state for almost 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how much wasn't accomplished because of the, you know, the holdup in any kind of legislative activity due to the Republican walkout. But in addition to that, another expression of some of the negative organizing that's been going on against trans and queer people around the country has come in the form of corporate boycotts. And then on the other side of those corporate boycotts, there's been kind of a reverse pushback against corporations that choose to withdraw from the public sphere their support for LGBTQIA plus rights. For instance, Starbucks is currently on strike because the stores had been instructed to take, and then Target, of course, was the target, specifically over articles of clothing that were meant to, you know, support trans women and their sense of dignity and their sense of, you know, affirming. It's just clothes that affirm a person. I mean, that's what all clothing does. And anyways, so all of this was going on. Has there been anything here in Portland? Have you received any, like, you know, people saying, oh, well, sorry, we're not going to be in the Pride Parade this year. It's not the right time or anything like that?
No, we have not.
Oh, great.
You know, one of the things about how we tend to approach sponsorship is building relationships with our sponsors over time, as well as, you know, we don't quote solicit sponsors. The vast majority of our sponsors come to us through our own community inside of those companies. And so the role that we play for them, or with them, I should say, is bringing the joy and fun of Pride, for lack of a better way to put it, to their efforts internally in their companies, because their coworkers, it's their first entry into what it means to support their queer coworkers, right? And so we're their, I tend to call it, you know, we're kind of their carrot for being able to engage their company in supporting their community. The other part of that is because we put such an emphasis on building relationships with whoever it is we're working with, they tend to, how do I put this? They're not going to back away from supporting us because they have a relationship with us. And so we definitely have conversations, particularly around how are we addressing, really the biggest question that comes up is planning for security. But other than that, we haven't had any of our partners come to us and tell us that they can't or won't participate because it's just too much to get into. There's no one that has done that.
That's great news. That's really wonderful. Is it fair to say then that there'll be a lot of the same companies turning out this year, showing their support for Pride, just like they did last year?
Yeah. Oh yeah. There'll be a lot of returning partners and some new ones as well. Yeah, we purposefully cultivate partners who will be with us over the long haul. It's one-offs they're not super beneficial and takes a lot of labor.
So kind of a side question, you can choose to answer this if you're able to, if you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to. The mayor and city council, unfortunately, it seems like they've kind of gone on the offensive against the homeless community in downtown, and they've reinstituted sweeps. They're trying to pass laws or make city rules that you can't camp during the day. They're really going after people who are the most vulnerable and the most marginalized in our community, which we know often includes trans and queer people.
Yes.
So the parade, how are you addressing issues related to houselessness? Is Pride Northwest doing anything to? I mean, because you're sort of asking people who basically live downtown on the street to kind of make room for these tens of thousands of people who are going to come down just for the day for a big party in their home, basically. And then go. So is Pride Northwest doing anything to sort of look at the needs and issues around houseless people and trying to work on ways of supporting them?
Yes. Short answer is yes. Our approach to the housing crisis, housing insecurity, as well as food insecurity in our community is something that isn't just on our minds when Pride's coming. It's a core issue that we work on year round and have for a number of years. We're a founding member of the LGBTQIA2S+ Housing Collective in Portland that is working primarily on long-term solutions with other entities, electeds, policy. It's a lot of policy. We have what we call a community impact program, which is a pretty broad program, but it includes everything from direct support to ensure that someone has groceries, all the way to this policy work that I mentioned. We also, because this is a big topic in amongst organizations right now, about recognizing that the status quo, the system that currently exists to address houselessness, and especially when you start talking about the shelter system, et cetera, even the best run entities are not well prepared for supporting and assisting our community. There's a long, deep history of our community being traumatized inside of these structures. So really, we've come to a place where, yes, we need those structures to get better. We need them to improve. But we also need to come to a place where, guess what? We kind of need to do it for ourselves. Our community is going to be the best vessel for taking care of our community. So this, like, this is a conversation that could also be its own show. Because there's a lot. We've over the last several years, like I say, it's everything from making sure that people have food to, you know, we are the fiscal sponsor and work really closely with the Trans Housing Coalition. That is a lot about financial disbursement and financial support for trans and queer folks in crisis. We also, specific to the festival, for example, specific to what are we doing during Pride, besides, in addition to elevating these issues and working with, you know, Hygiene for All, Gather, Make, Shelter, others, is the People's Pantry is the pantry that's located inside of Q Center. It's not run by Q Center, but they operate there 2 days a week in order to serve that surrounding community and to support and to serve the queer community. So we're partnering with them to collect food during Pride. This is something we used to do years ago with Our House and Esther's Pantry, and it was really successful. And so what we're doing is we're elevating the, how do I put it? Because in all honesty, there are a lot of folks in our community that don't have any idea how large this crisis is for our people. And a big part of what we want to do is make sure that people recognize, hey, this is a thing. This is a big deal. And we need to support, our community needs to take care of itself. So we're going to be collecting food. There are going to be barrels around the festival at the gates to support the People's Pantry, because they have, as financial conditions have deteriorated over the last, especially the last year, the People's Pantry inside Q Center has the demand for their service, and it is one of the most accessible direct places for queer folks to go to get some food support during the month, has just exploded. And they do get support from the Oregon Food Bank, but at the end of the day, they don't have enough food to support the need that's being demanded of them, and just in general. So this is one of the tangible things that we're doing during the festival itself. You know, and then our community impact program will, like I say, that's a broad program that goes everything from helping someone with groceries all the way to sponsoring and supporting other prides around the state, our fiscal sponsees, et cetera. So it's a broad program. And it kind of fluctuates depending upon what the need is that's brought to us.
Well, Deborah, I have enough questions basically for about another 5 hours of shows. But I don't think,
you know, I can ramble to a lot too, so.
Oh no, you're great. I don't think I'll get to all of them. We've been talking today with Deborah Porta from Pride Northwest. We have time for maybe two or three more minutes, Deborah. So I want to just make sure that we get in all the details again. When is Pride happening? How much is it? What are the things going on Pride weekend?
Sure. So the Portland Pride Waterfront Festival and Parade is July 15th and 16th. The parade is on the 16th and steps off at 11 a.m. from the North Park blocks and will end at the festival at the waterfront, right about Harvey Milk Street. As always, the Portland Pride Festival is a donation-based event, so we have a suggested donation of $10. We welcome whatever folks wish to give. No one's going to be turned away for not giving at the gate. Saturday, the festival runs from noon to 8, and then on Sunday from 11:30 to 6. There are, I definitely want to recommend that folks check out our event website, because there's so much more detail about what's happening that week and other dates as well. It's portlandpride.org. And at the top, under Portland Pride, there'll be a drop-down that says official Pride events. There's a whole host of events on there, from the Two-Spirit celebration that I mentioned, the youth drag show, the pageant, Galabration, I'm scrolling at the moment, Ankeny Alley, which is something we didn't get to, is again, it's a whole conversation around Portland Pride is kind of outgrowing the waterfront. The demand for participation in Pride has just grown, and it continues to. So we're sort of test piloting what it looks like to partner with downtown businesses and associations for Pride activations in other parts of downtown. So definitely check that one out as well. They've been incredibly supportive, and so we're excited about that. Then obviously we have the Dyke March. That'll be on Saturday the 15th. And then we have the Trans Pride March, which is also Saturday the 15th, that will gather in the North Park blocks and then march to the waterfront. And it steps off at 3:30. They'll start gathering at around 2. I think they're going to have some, you know, some vendors, some music. Every year is a little different, I think. But this is the Trans Pride March. This is their first year back since 2019. So,
oh, that's so great. The Trans Pride March is what got this show started. Like, oh, nice. I think it came out of the organizing around the 2014 Trans Pride March. Mm-hmm, and actually how this started. So that's great. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely check out the website for all the details. There's a lot going on.
Great. And what is the website again?
It's portlandpride.org. And then from the drop down up top, you'll be able to find official Pride events. So it's all on one page when you get there.
Great. Thanks, Deborah. One thing I didn't get a chance to really talk to you about much, we were gonna get to, but we just didn't really have time. Who is the Grand Marshal of the Parade this year?
So the Grand Marshal, we tend to look at our Grand Marshal as an opportunity to lift up community and whether it's organizations or people that kind of deserve some attention. GLAPN has been our Grand Marshal. The Portland Two-Spirit Society has been, Latinx Pride, and so on. This year, we're honoring and celebrating our drag community as a whole. So there'll be a whole collection of drag performers.
Is every drag performer who's going to be in the dragathon going to also be a grand marshal?
Oh, I don't know if all of them will. I know that we're going to have probably half a dozen vehicles full of drag queens in the grand marshal.
Oh, great. Well, fantastic. Well, Deborah, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on Trans Positive. And thank you for all of your work for Portland's community. It's a real honor to have some time to talk to you.
Thanks, Emma. I super appreciate it. And it's good to connect with you again.
Great. Thanks so much. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States. We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors.
Your co-workers.
Your students.
Your customers.
And even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this. These bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host of Transpositive, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio. Bedroom surprise.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her.